जी आज चैंटिंग को पेज 6 है, वी आर नाउ टू द इन्वोकेशन टू द देवस. बिफोर दैट वी पे रेस्पेक्ट टू द ट्रिपल जेम. ओके, कंपोज योर माइंड, डेवलप द फेथ, सदा वीर दैट वी पे रेस्पेक्ट माइंडफुली. Bedang pujemi. Damang pujemi. Sanghang pujemi. Okay, we can now proceed with the puja. Turn to page 6 of your chanting book. I will read the English version of the invocation. In this universe, in their entirety, let the dainties come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Yeah. I will now chant the Pali. Samantha chakavalesu atragacantu devata saddhamang munin rajasa sunantu sakha mokalang. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang bandata. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang bandata. Dhamma sonan kalo ayang bandata. We chant together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Ittipiso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno. Sugato loka vidho anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko. Ehi paseko opanaiko pacatang veditai buino hiti. Supatipanno bhagavato saukasango. Ujupatipanno bhagavato saukasango. Nyaya patipanno bhagavato saukasango. Samichi patipanno bhagavato saukasango. Ahuneyo. Sorry. Yadidang chattari purisa yogani. Ata purisa pugala esa bhagavato saukasango. Ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaneyo anuttarang punyang ketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, Sadhu. Okay, thank you. We will have to pay respect to the Triple Gem. Then we will start. So, Bedang Pujemi. Damang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay. So now we will continue. 1:30 to 3 p.m. We supposed to do the puja. We just finished, followed by briefing by Brother Teo on how to strengthen the five spiritual faculties of Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. Then, after that, this spiritual faculty is for you to overcome the five mental hindrances, which are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt. So this one we have covered. So the next essential Dhamma is to develop the understanding of the following essential Dhamma. The four right efforts within the Noble Eightfold Path, the five ways to overcome unwholesome or wrong thought, then the five daily contemplation we also covered already, the three evil root, we have mentioned about it, but we haven't gone into detail. I will cover that. Five aggregate of form and mind, I already briefly explained, except the first Noble Truth final summary, we have not read it. Then the dependent origination, the four Noble Truths, the four foundation of mindfulness, seven factors of enlightenment, and the importance of devotional practice or puja. This one we have touched on when we came in. So now I will touch on the four right efforts. You turn to chapter 10, your heart sutta note. Chapter 10 is on page 39. The four right efforts are at the end of the chapter, under 3.2. Anyway, we will cover this chapter so that you can understand. Okay. Heart Sutta, chapter 10, page 39. So 1.1. Brother Teo reminded us not to be heedless anymore. So by now I think you understand the danger of heedlessness. Not until you wake up to that reality that is so dangerous to be heedless, you can never really proceed with the cultivation. It's only until you have this clear understanding that heedlessness is so dangerous. The heedless are as if dead. When you wake up to that reality, you will vow never to be heedless again. And that is the faith that you must have, the attitude, the resolve that you must have to go this way. Then also we should thank all those who just now have to clean up the whole meditation hall and all the toilet and all the things. So there is a lot of Dhamma to be learned. So as usual, even after 2-3 years, because some of these experiences are not passed down or recorded, so when we have people who are new, when they do it, they make the same mistake because they thought it's like at home. When you mop floor, you get the mop, you get the pail of water, then you wet the whole thing, then you mop. Then you realize here no fan. And I said, well, the temperature, the weather is so good, you don't need a fan. Then you cannot dry. Then we don't have enough dry mop and dry cloth. So when you are experienced and far-sighted, you will foresee all this. That's why in future, those who are on duty, we would like to thank you, our gratitude. But be wise, eh? Learn from previous experience, not to wet it anymore. Then the thing about heedfulness or attentiveness is, even when you are doing this work, you have to be very, very mindful and very attentive, because no need to rush, understand? But sometimes in the excitement, we try to finish off fast. But you must know your body, you are no longer young as before. When you are still kid and in your early teen or 20s, you can. But when you are 50, 60, going to 70, please take care of your health. Then especially as you grow old, this is not laughing matter, you listen carefully. I have seen many people, just one slip of heedlessness, they fell and fractured their bones. Then they need to be hospitalized. These are very common happening. So be extra careful when you grow old. This is part of life, that reality. Learn to keep fit, alert, and mindful, heedful. Sometimes don't try to be a hero. Like you feel that you can easily cross the drain, then you think you're still young, the mind thinks you're still young. Then the moment you jump, if your age, your body cannot do that for you, then accident do happen. Then it's too late, just because of that moment of in awareness, because the thought still believe it can do it. Don't trust the thought. If you want to be healthy, you better tell yourself, no point hurry. I can still cross. I look for a proper crossing, then I cross. This is to avoid the condition for it arising. So all these are Dhamma that you can learn. That it can actually prevent you from unnecessary suffering and misery. Even though you may have the understanding and wisdom, but the moment you are heedless and you fall and you have this problem of fracture bone or something, you can go and ask the doctor how long you have to be in the hospital with the plaster, everything. And it can be really some very, very traumatic experience for certain people. So we learn from everything. Dhamma is everywhere, that's why heedfulness is very important. So not until you see the danger of heedlessness, you will never wake up to the reality. So I continue with the Heart Sutta note. So I repeat, Brahma Teo reminded us not to be heedless anymore, but instead strive on with heedfulness and diligence, making use of the great window of opportunity to cultivate and to gain liberation from birth and death. When the Buddha Sasana or his dispensation is still around, Buddha Sasana means the period where the teaching of the Buddha is still around. This is because according to the Buddha, it's very difficult to be born as a human being. In Mandarin, it's called Zhen Sen Nan De. Means it's very, very rare to have a human birth, to have a human body. And even more rare and difficult to be born during the era of the Buddha Sasana and to encounter the Buddha Dharma. In Mandarin, the Mahayana term is very beautiful. Fofa Nan Wen. Fofa is the Dhamma. Very difficult to come across. So do follow the advice of the Buddha to strive on your heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. For this great window of opportunity is indeed very, very, very rare. So please do not be complacent to let it slip away. For you will truly regret how foolish you were if you were to let it slip by. Like I explained yesterday, this window of opportunity, when you already have all the conditions fulfilled, you must make full use of it, so that you can stabilize all this understanding and make the appropriate aspiration, so that in future when you come life after life, your nature, you must have this understanding connected early, so that you know how to live life, so that you can understand life clearly, so that this noble truth can bring about wisdom that will help you overcome any mental delusion or ignorance. The earlier Heart Sutta short notes that emphasize on the following important basic essential Dhamma teaching of the Buddha are more than enough to help you all to develop the cultivation. That's why this was my summary to them at that time. I said, you have enough notes already. It's a matter of whether you read through them, develop understanding, and put them into practice or not. Because too much Dhamma may not help anymore if it's already spoken. And the next thing that you need to do is just put it into cultivation. The phase two. Phase one is learning of the teaching or the doctrine, Pariyatti. And this one, we have enough notes, books, for you to read up. That's why, if you're not clear or still could not understand, you are given opportunity to ask. There's a Q&A, you must ask. Then you must report your meditation. Otherwise, there is no condition. Yeah. Then the other thing is also, all this essential Dhamma, you must summarize it so that you understand them. Since now they are in printed form, properly documented, it's very easy. So now I go through with you again. The first thing we learned yesterday and today is what? Importance of what? The first one. The first essential Dhamma. What is it? You read the notes. You mean everybody don't have to know. You have, isn't it? Read to me aloud. Importance of what? Read together. 1, 2, 3. And what are the five spiritual faculties? Samadhi and Panya. English translation is what? Then, spiritual zeal or tenacity, the energy to drive you to cultivate. The third one, mindfulness. Fourth one, samadhi. Samadhi is collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, the stable mindfulness. The last one is wisdom. So if these five spiritual faculties, you cannot even remember or don't know what they are, how are you going to cultivate? It must be part of you. Then only you can recall and put it into cultivation. And these are very important. If you just read like knowledge, then leave it, it won't help you much. Understand not? The next one is read. Dhammapada verse. What is the advice of the Buddha? To avoid all evil, to do good and purify the mind. So this is based on the law of karma. You have to take care of karma. That's why you have to avoid all evil. You have to do good. Then you have to develop wisdom so that you will not be tormented when you are confronted with the First Noble Truth reality. So these are the important essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach. Third one is what? So what is heedfulness? Ever mindful, constantly meditative. Means train the mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That constitutes heedfulness. Okay? The fifth one is what? So this one is very important. That's why here I use the word to develop your own understanding. If you don't contemplate, you cannot. Like the Buddha said, he can only show you the way. He cannot walk for you. He cannot make you enlightened. So no. You have to walk the path yourself. You have to realize the truth yourself. Then second turning is about contemplation, inquiry, reflection on the truth, the Noble Truth that he has taught. So I read on. To develop this Chintamaya Panya, one needs to carry out constant, the word is constant, inquiry, reflection and contemplation on the Buddha Dhamma, or Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha, and not just via believing what the Buddha said, and then committing them to memory, and storing this so-called Dhamma up as knowledge. For the true Dhamma and wisdom is an understanding, and it is alive, a living Dhamma that can be experienced and understood from moment to moment, whereas knowledge and memory are of the past, very rigid and fixed, making you very rigid in your views. Understand or not? Dhamma knowledge cannot free you. Dhamma knowledge will make you rigid. Then you tend to argue. You tend to have this idea of what Dhamma is. Then you say, no, the book say this, the Buddha say this, my teacher say this. Then you argue. But when people ask, what do you say? You don't know. You quote the book, the teacher, and the whatever. You quote other authority. You yourself haven't investigated. You yourself have not understood. That's why knowledge can bring forth misunderstanding and argument. Knowledge is not wisdom. Knowledge will make you very rigid. Like the example I used to give. When you are in the primary school, you go to school, they teach you arithmetic. You only learn the four things. Arithmetic only constitutes addition, subtraction, division, and multiplication. So all of the 6 years, you only understand arithmetic as that thing. Then somebody come along and tell you, no, arithmetic, mathematics actually got a lot of other things. It got differential equation, it got calculus, it got Fourier series and the higher maths all things. You look at that guy, you say, you're crazy. My teacher never teach like that one. My teacher just say, mathematics or arithmetic is addition, subtraction, division and multiplication. And then you say, you're wrong. See? When you don't understand the higher teaching, you will behave like the primary school student. Then you become rigid. Understand not? Rigid in the sense that you only expose to what you are told. Then like addition, even addition. There was a case, true story. The father asked the son, what did you learn from school after going to school for 2 years, and that too. The kid say boring. Why? The father asked. He said, my arithmetic teacher, very undecided. He doesn't know what he's teaching. So the father asked him why. He said, one day he tell me 4 plus 3 is 7. Next day he forgot. He said, 5 plus 2 is 7. I don't know what he's teaching. Then the father said, he is right. What do you mean he's right? He told me on the first day, 4 plus 2 is 6. 4 plus 3 is 7. Now 5 plus 2 also 7. He cannot understand. Very rigid. Understand? Then he go and argue with the next class. Is you wrong? My teacher say 4 plus 3 is 7. Where got 6 plus 1 is 7? Where you don't understand the logic behind addition. A logic is in a certain way, a type of wisdom, a type of understanding. But when you understand the principle behind arithmetic, then whatever number you know how to add, there's a logic within. But knowledge is rigid, no, they memorize it all. 4 plus 3 is what? Straight away tell you the answer, 7. Then 5 plus 2, he doesn't know already. He shakes his head. Then my teacher never teach. He said, oh. Then you tell him 7, he argue with you. So this is a simple way to let you know the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom, no matter how the combination, you will know how to add because you already wise, you already understood what addition is, the principle behind. Whereas knowledge is rigid. You memorize, understand not? You commit to memory. Then you always recall from memory. This is what the book say, this is what the teacher say. But you yourself don't understand the first principle behind all this so-called subject or syllabus or teaching. So that is the same as Dhamma. When you commit to memory, it becomes knowledge. Then you can rattle, like the parrot. Five spiritual faculty, oh, sada, virya, sati, samadhi, panya. Ask you what they are, you don't know. Maybe you quote the text again. Sati is mindfulness. What is mindfulness? Mindful lah. Note lah. Do this lah. Because you never go into it. Then it brings me to just now, I think one of the sisters, she asked me one question. Is it relative? Is it mindfulness? Because she couldn't understand what mindfulness is. So she still have that idea or concept that mindfulness is just like what one of our Kayamita earlier on, they asked, when you bow, when you bow, there is this what they call sound from the drum or the bell. You can hear them and perceive them. So, is that also part of the training? That's why I explained this morning. The moment you are mindful and aware, body and mind is one, before the knowing, that is mindfulness. But the moment you know, you perceive. But if it's a pure perception without the word, it's still mindfulness, it's still awareness. Understand not? But the moment the word come out, it's no longer aware. But you don't worry, because you live in this world. Understand? You have been so habitual and conditioned by this memory thing that the word will come out. But you are aware before and after. Then it's okay. Understand? But your thought will never continue. It will not be a train of thought. Understand? You're just aware, silent. Then you continue to bow. Understand? Because the sense impression, imprint, is very strong. That's why it trigger off consciousness. That you are mindful, pop, you will perceive it straight away. Then aware, finish, come back. Then her question was, she said, isn't it when we do bowing, when we are mindful, we cannot listen to anything? What do you think? What do you think? That she has the right understanding? Because the reason being, you are told, you don't understand, then you believe this is right. That's why the question come about. The question come about because she has not developed it. She has not developed the mindfulness as yet. So I answer her in a very different way. I say, good. Now I give you an example, you understand. Like swimming. Swimming. Before you know how to swim, what you do? You see people with a float. Then you see them swim very nice. So you also hold on to a float. Nowadays the kid, the parent buy for them the plastic with the air inside. You inflate that. They like can swim inside there. But as long as you are assisted by float, float is like method and technique. You will never know how to swim. You will never understand what is the real swimming because you are conditionally swimming through a assistant, means the float. As long as you hold on to the float, you will never know what swimming is. I say, why not you just go into the pool and try? Try until one day you know how to swim. The moment you know how to swim, then you will know what swimming is, because you can swim without a float. Then you will come to a clear understanding that those people who have experienced swimming, they will tell you the same thing. Actually, swimming is very simple. You just believe that your body is lighter than water. You are lighter than water. The natural state of this body is already buoyancy. Means what? Without fear, you just allow the body to go in. You find out. Of course, the body sink down first. Correct, huh? And when it sinks down, you panic. You say, that guy tried to trick me. And so, then sometimes you swallow water. You say, don't want to swim already. Then you chicken out. Meditation is the same. Make you sleepy, you chicken out. But you don't believe what people tell you. Those who know how to swim, say, you don't worry, let it sink. Initially, it will sink because it takes time for the buoyancy force, the upthrust, to build up. Because the water display takes time to build up. So your body will go down. Then when the upthrust reaches its full force, it will push this body up. And then you realize, without doing anything, you're floating. Or then when you float, you got so much joy because this is the truth, this is the reality. Then like they say, to swim, you only need to move your limbs, understand not? You only need to move your hand and your leg. Then you just swim, so easy. But when you have fear and you panic, what happens? You drink water, understand not? Then you like drown. Why? Because you don't have the understanding. You don't trust what people who has gone through tell you. So meditation is the same. I already told you, the Buddha already said, the natural state of mind is already the meditative state, the true mind, the silent mind. As long as you don't stir it, react, put fear into it. Understand? That's like the moment you are silent, you are already peaceful, you are already aware. Try. That's why I say you go and bow like swimming. Bow until one day you know how to swim. Means bow until one day the mindfulness is there. The form and mind will know, understand not? It will understand what sati is. And no thought on, really like that one. Then how to tell you? That's why I say you must do it. If you don't do it, you talk about it, you never learn. Like swimming, like anything. Try, go in, make mistake, never mind. Walk, just walk. Don't try to know. Don't allow the mind, hey, is this correct? There is doubt, understand not? Am I doing it correctly? Yeah. That monk say, I must do like that. I must cut off everything. I must let go of this, let go. Then you use the idea and the thought and try to become what he said. In that way, you cannot learn. You can only learn through your own trial and error, understand not? Of course, you must have faith in certain teaching. Certain thing that people tell you, then no harm giving it a try. That's why the Buddha said, don't believe anything. Investigate into it. If it's the truth, it stand up to investigation. Why not give yourself a chance? Understand not? So this is how you can develop wisdom and understanding. So don't be afraid. Just do bow or walk or meditate, sit, relax, silent. Learn to be silent, like Brother Tiu, he's so new, and yet he can learn so fast, because you only need to understand and trust, then silent. Then find out whether silent is really what the Buddha said, or what Brother Tiu said or not. It's your true mind, unwavering mind, silent mind, positive. So all this, you can actually develop understanding through your own investigation. So meditation is about investigating the Dhamma, investigating into what the Buddha has taught you. Then, if it stands up to investigation, you have a lot of faith, understand not? Your faith becomes unshakable. Then you have a lot of joy. Then it will drive you further. Your virya is strengthened. That's why you must investigate into Dhamma. Then when it stands up to investigation, you have great faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then your sadha virya become unshakable. No matter what people say, you know, this is the truth. I'm going to follow this understanding. Law of karma, everything. You put to test. Dhammapada was 1 and 2. Heedlessness, the 3 evil root and all the things. Then when you see it clearly happening in life, then you got no more doubt. Then you just tell yourself, this is it. No more turning back. That's why you will know it's very dangerous to be heedless. You will strive on your heedfulness, following the advice of the Buddha, and you become beautiful. Yeah. Okay? So that is the important sharing. Engbe.
But yesterday, regarding the drum sound,
the perception of that vibration,
and it was there, it struck on my heart.
Yeah, direct, it will go in.
So, in another mind arising that it is sound consciousness.
Ah, yes. Very good.
Before I came,
yes, there was no word, nothing.
I did some
nothing.
Contemplation, so there's a confusion on consciousness
yes.
and awareness.
Yes, yes, yes. Sadhu.
This is the first time, I think, in 6 years of following, till on consciousness, it's pure awareness without content.
Ah, yes. Very good.
So sadhu. I have a better understanding of what consciousness
yes,
is.
Yes, sadhu.
Different
sadhu.
From sati.
Yes, sadhu, sadhu. Very beautiful.
And then when you make us to read out Appamadena, Sampadeta, Strafaldishi Footnotes, it's the first time also the tears of joy come out.
It will flow. Because this is what the heart wants to understand. And all this while, because you all never go into it. That's why I want you to read it out. When you read it out, it's different. Otherwise, you listen, you become sleepy. Then you complacent, you say, sweet on record, don't worry, I can listen again. But you never listen again. So this is what you must do, determine. That's why the faith will drive you, the virya will drive you. So this is very good, because not only she experienced this, I think Padmasuri and a few, because when they read, you can hear their voice. They have so much joy inside, because this Dhamma is so beautiful. That's why when you cannot appreciate all these Dhammapada words, actually, technically, you cannot progress. But these are beautiful Dhamma that the Buddha discovered through her own enlightenment. His own enlightenment. That's why he can share with us. And who on this planet, I ask you one more time, can come out with 423 words of truth that remain evergreen, never obsolete one, eternally applicable? I ask you to come out with one, also you cannot find it there. But the Buddha can come out with 423 Dhammapada verse, and all these verses are evergreen. Means, regardless of civilization, era, whatever, it is forever the truth. Everything that he said in the Dhammapada, that's why his wisdom, he perfected it through the wisdom way, and he is so different. That's why it becomes such powerful teaching. And of all the 10 perfections that Sakyamuni Buddha cultivated, you know which is the one that he held on to the best, the most complete. And he held on to it since the day he determined to cultivate that perfection until he became a Sammasambuddha. He never violated which parami. No, truth, satya, sadhu. That's why his words are very powerful. That truth, that perfection of truth, satya, he held in and perfected it from the day he made the determination to be a Sammasambuddha until he became a Sammasambuddha. He has never violated that faith or that parami. He held on to it. That's why his words are very powerful. He is foremost in the perfection of satya. That's why his words are very, very direct, very powerful. The word of truth. So Sakyamuni has this uniqueness. So truth is very, very important. And when you understand truth, there is joy. Like during the early years, 40 odd years ago, that time I was searching for religion. Then all of a sudden, somebody gave me a book. One of the classmates, sister. What Buddhists Believe, the first edition, by Chief Reverend, the late Chief, Kesari Dhammananda. The moment I read the book, I was full of joy. Because the first few chapters talk about Chinese tradition and what they call belief system. Then I realized what my mother did was actually Chinese tradition and belief system. Nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching. No. Wow, I was full of joy because when I was young, I saw what my mother did. I said, if this is Buddhism, I said, forget about it. Then she go to the dainties. She make offering, slaughter chicken, everything, offer fruit and all things. then he like negotiate and bargain with the deity. You have to bring about better life, help my children and my loved one to actually do well in the exam, have good health, recover from whatever sickness. Then I will come and offer you more, means whatever. Then I said, wow, I can negotiate like that. Then someone involves slaughtering a chicken or something. I said, if this is Buddhism, I don't want to look at it. So I didn't know until when I was in Form 5, 1971. Then when I saw this book, I was full of joy. Then I read on. I want to know what the Buddha teach. The moment I read the Four Noble Truths, there is no turning back. I was full of joy. I said, that's it. Nobody in this universe, I say, not only our planet, who can have the wisdom to summarize all of truth into just Four Noble Truths, so beautiful, so simple, and it encompasses all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane. It's like when I understand this Four Noble Truths, I understand life, I understand the secret of life, I know how to live, everything is there. I said, nobody can do that. Unless he is the real Samasambuddha. That's why from that moment, I never turn back. I just go all out to understand this teaching. Then for me, it's very simple. Because at that time, I didn't even know the Dhamma, I didn't even meditate. But inside my heart, I knew, even if I have realized the enlightenment that the Buddha has realized, of course not his full perfection, I couldn't have summarized all of the understanding into just four simple truths. Noble truth, so beautifully. No way. That's why I knew when the prototype is there, cultivating Buddha Dhamma is so simple. It's like technology. When the first calculator come out to improve on it, to modify, and make it more powerful and better. It's so much easier. But the first guy who came out with the prototype is, that one is a genius. That one is very difficult. So Dhamma is the same. In the Buddha Sasana, we have the teaching, the prototype. You don't need to go and investigate and search. It's already properly summarized for you. Even all the Buddha advice the same, avoid all evil, very good, purify the mind. But the teaching for them to put into such simple form, so precisely, that's why they are called Samasambuddha, is very rare. So you must have a lot of understanding, then you must have a lot of gratitude and respect for the Buddha, where he is such a beautiful being, fully enlightened, not only enlightened, complete in enlightenment. And to have him as your teacher, you should have a lot of what they call faith, respect, and gratitude. So this is how you strengthen your spiritual faculty. Then we should thank Ingvi for sharing. Beautiful, we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Like she said, this is the first time in 6 years after following me. Because the last retreat also, she developed some very good experience and understanding. For the first time, she experienced the silent mind when she was locked out that night. She came and shared her. There was so much joy. Because she tried so hard, she was so sincere. The faith very strong. But somehow, the thing doesn't come in. Then I think because of her faith, and later on, after she did the repentance, I remember she talked to me, where she find it very strange. This life, been so Theravada in tradition, because she was basically very Theravada. Then her chanting is very good. That's why a lot of the past is from Sri Lanka and India. And because of that, Theravada, they have this type of what they call bias towards Mahayana. So a big portion of Theravadin, they don't believe Mahayana teaching. So that's why they just brush it off. And because when she came for the retreat that year, I think Sister Lian, she should thank Sister Lian. Sister Lian was the one, because I don't know her one, the first time she came for the retreat. Then she started to have affinity with the Virochana Buddha, the Pusian Buddha. Then she started to tell them that they received message that they must go and ask for forgiveness and connect, make the affinity away. And then he go and do and determine, a few of them did. Or then after that, all of a sudden, he went alone up there, she said. Then she got faith, you know, when suddenly the mind becomes so quiet, so peaceful, so still, silent. And then the sign was what? I said, you don't need stethoscope, you can feel your own heartbeat. The moment she felt her own heartbeat pounding with the sati, the mindfulness, the silent mind, she was full of faith and joy. After that, she knew, that's it. And it's so different. That's why the faith become very strong. And this time she got the pure perception, the pure awareness, before the content go in. That's why the true mind will listen, but differently, without the words. Even the chipping of the birds and all. There are so many types of birds, and they are all different, the vibration. But before you conceptualize it, form word, that pure consciousness that you experience, this is what I mean by you can experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, the pristine beauty, and so on. Because they are all in nature. The pure experience, the true experience of life, when your mind is silent without thought. When you are without thought means what? You don't have fear, worry, anxiety. You don't have any of the emotion and the mental state. It's just pure, beautiful experience. That's why you see the Zen, Mahayana Zen teaching. To them, drinking a cup of Chinese tea is Zen. You can understand that? You can understand the meaning or not? You have been drinking Chinese tea for so long, isn't it? Did you learn anything? Did you develop Zen or awakening? Because they are so aware and mindful, at the moment of sense experience when they drink, the pure awareness, the mind is with the moment. Really, really with that taste consciousness, understand, without word. When they are aware, silent, without word, their mind is very peaceful, very calm. Yeah, there is no thought. No thought means no fear, no worry, no anxiety. And such a mind is so beautiful, isn't it? That's why it's with the moment, with clarity, with pure awareness, without content. And that so-called drinking of that tea, the tasting is so different. That's why they can feel the tea quality, everything. They are very sensitive, because of that pure awareness. And this is how you experience life. You can truly live to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life, because these are all within life possible to experience, provided you can silence your mind. You can be with your true nature, experiencing them. But the moment you bring in thought, you are already lost in thought. You are not experiencing anymore. Understand not? You are with the word, with the concept. You are not aware at that moment. It's just like this microphone. Because you have been so conditioned in a microphone. So, let's say I ask you, what microphone did Brother Teo use? What color? And now you pay attention, then you try to see clearly. Last time, microphone, even after you attend so many retreats, you may not remember what type of microphone I hold. You just know, microphone, Brother Teo use the microphone to speak. Understand? Because you are not mindful, you are not aware. When you are aware, you see this without the word. You see clarity of the whole of this so-called microphone. Even an art, a flower, or whatever you come to perceive, without the word, you see the clarity and the beauty of it. But of course you need word to describe. Like this flooring, the grain and all those things. But all the very clear perception, without word when you see, so beautiful. Even that flower, without word you see, the clarity, every part of it, then you are very attentive, then you understand, each and every one. That is what direct seeing is all about. That's why Brother Song, after he gone through that experience, the connection with the true mind, she can see when he was in Burma. He said when he was eating, for the first time in his life, The eating was so different, so mindful, every action. Then after that, when he went out, he was on his natural relaxed state of walking. Then all of a sudden, she understood what the directing is of. But he experienced it. He saw the whole of the seeing consciousness without word on. So beautiful. Then when the perception comes in, he also aware. How come he can see now? Last time he cannot see. Well, he connected. He has the sati. He has the silent mind. That's why without the silent mind, you use thought, you cannot understand this teaching. You will find it very difficult to understand. Yeah. So be patient. Just do. Don't try to know. Do until sati. When it comes, the form of mind will know. It's just like swimming. When you already know how to swim, that form of mind will know what swimming is. Then he will agree. Yeah. Don't do anything. The body is buoyancy. It will float on. Oh. Then every time you jump into the pool, you are confident already. Somehow, it will surface. And then you just swim. Breaststroke, freestyle, whatever, or butterfly. Yeah. Then swimming becomes so much easier. You no need to struggle. You no need to have fear. You no need to force yourself very hard to keep afloat. All this is not necessary. Because the natural state of body is buoyancy. So when you know the natural state of mind is already aware, then why you try to be aware? It's just like you try to teach the fish how to swim. The natural, what they call tendency of fish is, you put them in water, they will know how to swim, because that is what their DNA, everything is all about. So swimming to them is like their part of them. It's natural to them. So, awareness is actually part of your true nature. Then why must you learn to be aware? You only learn something that you don't have, isn't it? Asana, the skill or whatever. But because you are confused by the two types of mind. One is the thinking mind, the mundane mind. The condition arising mind. And that one you cannot understand, you cannot see. You get trapped, you get entangled. And this is the one that gives rise to all the hindrance, the evil root. Because the user of thought before it's enlightened definitely has this evil root. That's why a living being cannot escape. Not until you develop the understanding, then you straighten your view. Then the user of thought become wise. And then only there can be liberation. And then only that form of mind will not be afflicted anymore. Understand? Without wisdom, living being always fall. Yeah. They can never rise. They can never understand what is going on. So delusion is very powerful. Without the Dhamma, it's very difficult to illuminate your mind and to develop wisdom, to awaken to it. Ignorant darkness will continue to grasp you, haunt the form of mind. That's why karma become eternity. So all this understanding you can develop the moment you are faith, you have very strong faith, then you determine sincerely to walk this way and you persevere. Three things you need: faith, sincerity and perseverance. The way will be there, the Dhamma will be there, and you will awaken. Okay? Then we read on. The next part is part 2. What are the deviant views? Deviant views means deviated or wrong view or devious view born of delusion that can condition one's suffering and misery. This one you know. Wrong view. What is affliction? Affliction is another word for mental suffering. Conditioned by one of the three evil roots. Greed, hatred and delusion. The next one is, this one is very important. The unmoving mind of true suchness. The true mind with the enlightenment factor of samadhi and upeka of equanimity. So when you have upeka and equanimity, the mind is unmoving. That's why it is true suchness. Why is it unmoving? Not because it is in samadhi alone, because there is equanimity. Samadhi born of wisdom. And that is upeka. Yeah. So upekkha or equanimity born of wisdom is the unmoving mind of true suchness. In Mandarin it's called zu zu putong. Zu zu is true suchness, unmoving. This Q&A is very good. Why did the Buddha specifically state that the duration of 7 years maximum or 7 days to realize the enlightenment of at least an anagami if one were to maintain this four foundation of mindfulness or satipatthana practices as taught by him? Anybody want to try to answer? Don't look at the answer. You know why or not? Why 7 days fastest, 7 years longest? Okay, anyway, I read you the answer easier, otherwise we run out of time. I supposed to stop what time? Huh? 3 o'clock. Oh, means half an hour left. Okay, I will have to rush a bit. The four arousing of mindfulness or four foundation of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha is very unique. Because according to the Buddha, the four arousing of mindfulness is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the realization of Nibbana. Then the Buddha continued telling the bhikkhu, "Verily, O bhikkhu, should any person maintain this four arousing of mindfulness in this manner for 7 years, for 6 years, for 2 years, let alone a year, for 7 months, 2 months, 1 month, half month, or 1 week, then by him again, one of the two fruition is proper to be expected. Wisdom in the here and the now, or is some form of clinging, is still present, the state of a non-returner or anagami." So this is the assurance given by the Buddha. So it is worthwhile to give it a try, isn't it? Just sacrifice a maximum of 7 years to cultivate the satipatthana, and your future existence, should you choose to come back, is all set and taken care of. There is no more fear, worry, anxiety, sadness and suffering, etc. from then onward. It's worth the while, isn't it? So strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. So that question that was asked, you have to tell yourself whether you trust the Buddha or not. And the only way to answer you is to put it into practice. Then you find out yourself. For the Sammasambuddha to say that means he really, really have the understanding. Because there are people who actually awaken within 7 days. There are some who awaken within a day. But this one is not because they did it this life. Because in the past, they have already cultivated. Then when condition is fulfilled, it will awaken. What the Buddha meant here is, for people who are cultivating this four foundation of mindfulness, without much of their past, what they call cultivation to support them, means a normal cultivator. Then it depends on your good roots. It depends on how you have developed the parami. Then for those who are actually ready with the good root and the good parami, actually 7 days is possible. But don't worry about how long it takes, because it's not the number of days. It's the condition that you need to fulfill. And when the condition are fulfilled and it will manifest, then it will unfold. That it can happen anytime. Even 7 years is not that long. Understand? And to actually put in effort for 7 years is worth the while. Because after that, life after life, if you choose to come or you have to come, everything is taken care of because you will never fall. And the Buddha make it very clear, even a sotapan, the first stage of sainthood, after you have realized that, you only come back maximum 7 lives to the sensual. Then if you hit the second stage of sainthood, they call it the once returner, you only return to the sensual realm one more life. Then anagami, they call it the non-returner, means you don't come back to this sensual world. You don't take any more birth here. You will end up in the pure abode, in the form realm, where you will become arahant from there. That's why they are called non-returner. Then we move on. Meditation. Do not just believe what has been spoken, but instead investigate into all the Dhamma or truth as advised by the Buddha. We are constant reflection, contemplation and inquiry into all the Dhamma to fully understand the three turning of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha. Once you have developed the three types of corresponding wisdom, you will know how to be free, how to free yourself, and later share your understanding with others so that you too can become a blessing to all. So this three turning of the Four Noble Truths, they are very important. Is described in other place in the notes. This next paragraph is very important. As thought is response to memory, so memory is thought based and is of the past, where whatever you accumulate is of the past experience. Hence, when you cultivate based on memory, which is thought and knowledge based, you cannot possibly realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. With knowledge, which is not wisdom, you tend to be rigid in your views. So you tend to use words, interpret them according to your views and opinion. You will also have the tendency to argue with people and perceive things as right and wrong. So that is the danger of thought-based meditation, knowledge-based meditation. Then the four right effort within the Noble Eightfold Path. This one is very important. The first right effort is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech and thought that has arisen. So the Buddha said, when you are mindful, heedful, you can see your mental intention. You can see the evil root, the of greed, hatred and delusion. So the moment you see it arisen already, you must apply right effort. This is still thought-based, thought level, to abandon it. So that is the first way. So right effort to abandon. After you abandon, what you do? You have to train your mind to be mindful so that before it arises, you can prevent it from arising. And the second right effort is to have mindfulness and understanding. When you see the sign coming, before even you become angry, unhappy, or selfish, you straight away can prevent it from arising because you know this is not the way to act. This is not the way to do things. That's why you exercise restraint. Sabba asabhasutta. And your mind cannot do it anymore because you are mindful, you are heedful. But the first one, you cannot because the evil root are so strong. Habitual tendency, it keep on arising. But even when they arise, when you are mindful, that's why, like the Buddha said, under citta nupassana, when there is greed, you must be aware. Understand? When there is hatred, you must be aware. When there is delusion, you must be aware. So the moment you're aware, you can deal with it. You can arise the right effort to abandon it. And there are five ways to abandon. They are all in the notes. What are the five ways to abandon unwholesome thought? First is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. It's all in the note, no need to write down. Page what? Page 28, very good, thank you. Do you see? People who have read up, they know. Yes, page 28, you read it yourself. 3.2. Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. For example, if there is anger, then develop metta or loving kindness. And if there is cruelty, then develop compassion. And if there is fear, develop faith. Then the second way is to think of the consequence of holding on to this unwholesome thought or evil root. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots, which are the root of all evil, they will continue. They will condition you to become an evil person. For example, anger can condition you into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. So when you reflect on the consequence, you will know your life. You cannot allow evil roots to stay, like your anger, your hatred, your selfishness, your lust, your desire, your craving. If it stays in your heart, what happens? They are the evil root of all you. They will make you evil. They will make you lustful. They will make you emotional, angry, hatred, envy, jealousy, everything. So you become an evil person. Is that what you want? The law of karma will take its course. If you commit evil, you reap what you sow. Suffering will follow you, like Dhammapada verse 1. Suffering will follow you like the wheel of the oxen's, what they call the oxen's wheel, sorry. The hood that follows the wheel of the oxen's cart. So all this, they will become very clear. The other thing is also, the tree will also call tree poison. You know what is poison, can kill you. So when you allow anger and hatred and selfishness and fear to be in your heart, they are the tree poison. They can kill you. Spiritually, you are dead. That's why these are very dangerous evil roots. Tree poison. That's why you have to determine to root it out. So when you already contemplate and reflect on their consequence, the danger of this evil root, you will determine to abandon it. Yeah. So the third way is the best. The third way is the meditative way. This is how the meditation is to be done. That's why all along I've been telling you, just silence your mind. Don't do anything and be with it. Even when there is anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, fear, just like what Brother Tune did, be with it. Then find out what happened. Then you come to realize they are conditioned arising state, triggered by your wrong view. And when you can be with it, the silent mind will understand how they arise and how they cease. The moment there is no wrong view, it will cease to be. Your wrong view is due to your habitual tendency, because you have been reacting to all these things, fear of the unknown, everything. So from here, you start to see, oh, because of this wrong view, you need to straighten further. You need to actually perfect it. Then you contemplate, who fear, what fear, the thought fear. What is thought? Five aggregate, form and mind, mental five aggregate. And then you realize they have the universal characteristic. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta, vedana anicang, vedana anatta. Then sanya anicang, sanya anatta. Sangkara anicang, sangkara anatta. They are impermanent, they are non-self, empty. Then vinyanang also same. That's why the whole lot of five aggregate of form and mind, they are empty, like what Kuan Yin came to know and realize. Then when you come to know and realize that they are conditioned arising entity, not you, then this thought loses its power. And as to condition any more fear in the form of mind, it's just a thought. How come it has power to make you so miserable, so fearful, so unhappy? That's why those who have depression, sorrow, lamentation, you ask them to reflect. It's only a thought. How come it has power to make you so miserable? Who gave it power? The form of mind through delusion gave it power, Anasana. That's why I told a lot of people, it's only a thought. How come you so deludedly allow it to have such power to make you so miserable? Your life, you decide how you want to live. To be happy or miserable is entirely your choice. Why do you allow the thought to condition you into so much suffering and misery? Because you don't have the Dhamma, you don't understand the teaching, and you don't know who you are and what you are. So that is the cause. So the third way I read to you now. Relax and aware. We are just let things be. Can you do it? When you have right view, I told you, whatever that arises, the Buddha always say what? There are causes and conditions behind. Anasana. And what are the causes and conditions? 99.999% is karma. Anasana. That's why when you accept that reality, it must be due to past causes. Otherwise, this thing cannot happen. Good and bad. So when you can accept things as they are, then you just relax and aware. We are just let things be. Now, this is the meditative way. We are understanding that the natural state of mind before is stirring is already the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and silent inner awareness. And the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. May it be fear, may it be anger, hatred, jealousy, envy, or whatever it is. Even lust. Because they are conditioned arising, understand or not? Through your wrong view, it stirs, the mind stirs. Whatever that arises through energy will also cease when you don't give it further energy. And so that's why, like a flower, after it has flower finished, what will happen to the flower? Yeah? It will start to wither off, isn't it? That's why the very flowering of that thought, when it reached the end, because you cut the flower out of the tree or the plant, and so on. Then after it has reached full budding or blossom, it will start to decay again, and so on. Then it will wither. So thought also same. Everything that is condition arising is supported by energy field, condition. When condition cease to be, it will cease to be. So you just silence your mind, be with it, and understand how it come and how it go. And then you see the reality. They are impermanent. They are condition arising, cause of phenomena. Empty, no reality. You cannot hold on to them as well. Because it's not an eternal, unchanging entity. That you can call, this is me, this is I, and therefore this can be mine. No such thing, the Buddha said. Then we move on to the fourth one. The fourth one developed wisdom. But the third one, every time you have a problem, you go and silence your mind, then it becomes beautiful again. Just like the hermit in the jungle. Huh? So every time you got problem, you run away, you go to retreat, calm, peaceful. No more problem. Come out, got problem again. Because energy field, calmness, don't free you. You need to develop wisdom. So what did the Buddha said? Trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it. And that is the wisdom way. That's why the Buddha said, when you silent and just aware, then you will come to know how the unarisen hindrance of fear come to be, isn't it? Or greed, selfishness come to be. Well, after you have gone through it many times, you will know. Before you get angry, you were never angry. Then what caused it? And then you trace back the origination factor. Oh, through one of the sense door. When I see this fellow, the thought memory, then it conditioned. That's how I can share with you, because I saw it. Understand? Why I see this guy last time, only I get angry. Why other guy I don't get angry? Understand? Because you have a wrong view, a perception of it. Then it's for memory. Understand? Maybe that guy has changed. You don't know. You never give it a chance. Understand? Then you hold on to your past memory of what he is through your views and opinion. Then you straight away react. That's how thought has power. Because you cling, you accumulate, you hold through memory. Then thought is respond to memory. That's like the moment you see, or you hear, or like somebody scolding you, abusing you, what happened? The hearing consciousness go in, you process through memory, then you react straight away. And this is how the paticca samuppada, dependent origination, trigger off. Upon contact, what happened? You always say, feeling arises. Actually, upon contact, consciousness arises first, like the physical experiment. Then you input your content. That's why, avijja paccaya sankara. Sankara is what? Mental activity. Okay? Mental activity is when you think. When you think means what? You make contact with the mind. Mind is an organ. So when you make contact, consciousness come to be. Correct or not? So avijja paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vinyanang. This vinyanang is actually pure consciousness. But the moment your memory come in and your view, then it condition it into nama rupang, form and mind, five aggregate, the content you put in already. Then dependent on that nama rupang, there must be sense basis, otherwise it cannot arise. Understand? Then dependent on that sense basis, because the seven universes are there, there is contact. Understand? Without contact, it cannot trigger off consciousness also. So because of contact, at that moment of contact, not only consciousness arises, you input the content, feeling arises, and so on. Initially, it's pure feeling, but because your content, you got delusion, straight away, feeling, condition, craving, you cannot stop, and so on. You cannot, like what they teach you, cut that feeling. As long as you cut that feeling, you don't allow it to become craving, they say you no more suffering. You go and do. Impossible. Without wisdom, yoni so manasikara, you cannot cut, I tell you. Because delusion immediately conditions you into craving. You cannot stop. That's why dependent origination, you understand, you see inside your mind how it functions, it's a total different thing. That's why without wisdom, you cannot cope with life. You cannot handle defilement. Sabba Asava Sutta also mentioned, you must have right attention. Things that are right for attention, what are they? The Four Noble Truths, the Three Turning. Then from there you develop wisdom. Then Sabba Asava Sutta say, destruction of Asava is only possible for those who see and know, or know and see. Know and see what? Know and see with wisdom, yoniso manasikara. The Buddha put it very clearly in the sutta. So if you don't have wisdom, you cannot cut a feeling and so on. Then people tell you, hey, let go lah, don't attach. Cannot. Who let go? The person who cling and hold is deluded, try to let go. How can he let go? And so, just like the prisoner, you put him in because he has certain crime, then you go and tell the prison authority, don't be so harsh, let go. You let him go, he never come back. So you cannot, because the reason why he go in is because he commit crime. So Dhamma is the same. When you are deluded, you cannot let go, understand? You will hold, you will cling, you will have this defilement. They will never change until they transform. So letting go, for those who understand, is a fallacy. But you tend to use it in your daily language because it is so logical, isn't it? Yeah? Because if I don't let go, it torments me, it tortures me. So I let go lah. Let go is what? Like people make you angry, yeah? What do you do? You go and suppress your anger, no? You say, anger is a evil, I shouldn't have anger. So you go and suppress and control your anger. You don't want to get angry, yeah? You yan, you say yan. But that is not yan, no. That is suppression. You control your emotion. But the real meaning of kanti, patient, is you are patient because you have wisdom. Understand not? You are not suppressing it. You have patience because you understand all these are delusion, defilement. That's why you can accept that reality. You don't have to suppress the anger. Okay, I don't want to get angry with you. Then like that pastor I used to quote, he said, easy to say, I forgive. But very difficult to forget. When you forgive and you cannot forget, you where got forgive? Understand? They always say, they say, God say you must be kind, forgive them for they know not what they are doing, like Jesus said. So forgive. Then the pastor tell my brother-in-law who got married a few years back, I became the best man because the guardian, because the parent passed away. Then the pastor went up and say, easy to forgive, but very difficult to forget. Means what? He still hold on to the anger and the hatred. Then, have you forgiven? You haven't, isn't it? Correct? The moment you forgive, means what? You free yourself. Understand? You not only forgive that person, you free yourself. Forgive means what? I don't hate you anymore. Understand? I got no more of this anger towards you, hatred towards you. Means the evil root, you root it out. Understand? That's why when you forgive somebody, you understand through wisdom, you actually free yourself. Understand? You don't have to let go of the anger. Understand? Let go lah, forget lah, this guy lah, that one lah. You think you let go? your thoughts still say this guy like that one, no? But you say, okay lah, forget about him lah, he's like that one lah. What you mean? You haven't forgiven him, because you think you want to be a nice guy, eh? You don't want to hate him anymore. But the moment you see him, the thought recall, memory recall. And that is how you live your life, living being. So that's why you have to develop wisdom. Eh? Okay, we go on to the actual statement. Trace the origination factor of the unwholesome thought. Then retrospectively reverse it. Via the cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma. Under Dhamma Nupassana, the Buddha got teached. We are the cultivating of mindfulness of the 6 internal sense bases and 6 external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. Yeah. So when you trace, it's always from one of your sense law, either through what you see or what you hear or what you think. Then your mind react and stir. Then it arises. Then when you silent, be with it, especially anger, emotion, you just silent next time. Then you see how it subsides. The moment you see how it subsides, you have a lot of joy. But the original state of mind before the delusion and the stirring was the meditative state, peaceful, silent, quiet. In the retreat, you can experience that. The agitated mind that you bring along now is so quiet, so still. Because the environment, the setting is beautiful. Then you know how to silence. That's why you will become very peaceful. And you will enjoy this heedful living. Then when you see the big difference between heedful and heedlessness when you are back in your normal life, then you will determine to be heedful from now onward. Never to fall back to the old way. But this way is so much more peaceful, beautiful than the old way. So all this you will understand. Then the last one is the 5th way. The Buddha said, if all the above 4 ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha. He said, with clenched teeth and your tongue towards your palate, you should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought. Where if all the 4 things, the 4 ways you also cannot develop, the only way to fight is to be very, very determined. So through your thought, through your determination. Then we go back to page 40. We finish off the other 3 right effort. Then you can start your meditation. The 2nd right effort we finish. Or 1st and 2nd also we finish. The 3rd right effort is to arise the right effort to cultivate the appropriate right speech, right action, and right thought regularly. And you must understand what is right thought, right speech, and right action. Otherwise, you cannot cultivate. You cannot cultivate something that you don't understand. Correct or not? So what are the right speech? You know what is wrong speech, the 4 types of wrong speech. What are the 4 types of wrong speech? First one is what? False speech, means actually it's harsh speech, first one, harsh speech. Then after that, backbiting. You say bad thing about people behind their back. Then the 3rd one is telling lie. The last one is frivolous speech, so you avoid this 4. Then what constitutes right speech? This 3rd right effort is to cultivate right speech. What are they? Gentle, pleasant, and nice, appropriate speeches. Born of understanding, born of wisdom, to encourage, to motivate, to have gratitude, to have contentment, to have respect. All these are right speech. Understand? It's just like among you all, Kayanamitta. Because there is this understanding. All of you walk the path of Dhamma. So there is a type of understanding. When you come together, you have good fellowship. Yeah, everybody is so sincere. You walk the path of Dhamma. You keep your precept. You really, really strive on with heedfulness. So what you do is, you support each other, understand not? Motivate each other, encourage each other. And you create the causes and conditions for each other to move, to walk the path of Dhamma. Whatever you do through karma, it will come back to you. If you help, motivate, counsel, and do all that, in future, people will do back to you. You reap what you sow. That's why Kayana Metta shape is one of the good way to progress. That's why the Buddha in his teaching got mentioned, no? You must have Kayana Metta, no? One of the criteria for enlightenment, even to be a Sotapan, you must have good Dhamma friend. And who is the best Dhamma friend? Yeah? The Buddha himself. He said, he is the Kayana Metta without comparison. Yeah? There are two types of Kayana Metta, no, Dhamma friend. The first type is the normal one who walk the path of Dhamma, still searching for truth. The second one is the Dhamma friend that has the Dhamma. You can meet one, you are very lucky. And in Cantonese they say, Phat Tat Lo. Or Hokkien, Phat Tat Lo. But you also have to be careful, because if you're deluded, you go and do all those funny things, then it becomes the opposite. But if you know how to make use of it and develop the faith, then rejoice, then do whatever that you understand, then you will benefit a lot. So this is what you need to do. You have to understand what is right thought. Then right action. Right action are all the appropriate good action. Like non-killing. Means you have what they call compassion. You have love. You know how to rejoice. Then you know how to respect and have gratitude towards all these people. So you act with a lot of understanding. You are not cunning, you are not deceitful, you don't have evil intention behind your action. You are very sincere, you are very truthful. All this will bring about right action. Then you will do a lot of generosity. You will rejoice and you will help people to progress along the path of Dhamma. Then you repay your parent gratitude. You help them. So you act accordingly. You look after them. You support them. So all these are appropriate right action. Then the other one is right thought. Right thought are wholesome thought that is free of the evil roots. Understand? It's just like just now we mentioned, the four Brahma Vihara state, thought of loving kindness, compassion, rejoicing, mudita, sympathetic joy, and equanimous mind, upekkha, then gratitude. All these are right thought, contentment, sincerity, respect, and all those things. Okay, the last right effort is to continuously arise the right effort to refine upon whatever wholesomeness that is already in you, until they become perfected, as again just to maintain. Well, most people put to maintain the wholesomeness as stated in most texts. So you not only maintain, you refine upon and try to perfect it. So these are the four right effort. Okay, exactly 3 o'clock. So we end. Then you can continue with your form of meditation. So 3 to 4:30, your form of meditation, we are sitting or lying down or walking, plus daily mindfulness training, we are bowing, Dhamma contemplation, reflection and inquiry within the vicinity of the temple. While in the walking, standing, sitting and lying down posture, you maintain mindfulness. So I leave it to you. You can bow or you can walk or you can silence your mind. If you find sitting good, you continue to sit. But over the 9 days, your leg can give you a problem, I know. So you combine a few of this cultivation. Bowing, if it's not giving you problem, you bow is the best. Because when I did that during the early years, it helped me so much to develop my... I just bow. I don't want to know anything. I just bow until body and mind is one. Then when you bow until the sati is there, you will know one. Everything like slow down, but actually you didn't really slow down. Then you will move to your own pace by itself. Because that mindfulness is like continuous. The mind and the body just zoom, zoom. Then it's like slow motion. According to the mindfulness, it's like slow motion, but it's not slow motion. It will slow it down on its own. It will understand at the pace the mindfulness is. Then later on, it can be very fast. Then the mindfulness can be very fast. Then after that, you realize everything you do, your movement, your action, all of the minor activity and movement is like magnified. Like a little bit of movement is like a very big movement there. But that is what sati is all about. It becomes very sensitive. And you can experience that. That's why don't try to know when you do the meditation, the training of the mind to be aware. You just bow, you just walk, you just sit, relax, silent, be with it. Then when the sati come, you will know one. You don't need method technique already. You don't need anything to anchor the mind. But the mind that is in sati will know. Like swimming. You swim, swim, do until you know how to swim. You understand what swimming is. So have faith. Just do. Don't worry. Just do. Yeah. You will come. Yeah. Yeah. Correct, automatic, no effort on. Huh? When your thought is there, you realize it's not natural. That you very difficult to get sati. You just do, don't worry. Like what Padmasuri say, until you become like automatic. Automatic, understand not? But it's not mechanical now, automatic with full awareness now. Understand not? Very good, sadhu. Just do. Because the perfection of it, you will know. Like you learn cycling, until you're very good. You're very mindful, understand not? Then you realize body and mind as one. Even badminton, your stroke, execute, all as one, understand not? Body, mind, and shuttlecock, and racket, simultaneously, very fast. That's why you can execute them very skillfully. When you are very skillful, you are mindful. But right mindfulness is to use that mindfulness to cultivate noble eightfold path. That is right mindfulness. If you use it for qigong, everything is mindfulness, but not the right mindfulness. Understand? It's up to you what you want. If you want energy field, you want health, if you want to develop qi and all those things, then you use mindfulness to develop that. But if you want to develop wisdom, then you use it to cultivate wisdom by cultivating noble eightfold path. Okay? You go ahead. There's another question. Pass the mic to Selina.
Regarding the bowing, when you say bowing, do you need to recite?
It's up to you. What I did that time, because Master Sun Ho asked us to recite the name of our original teacher, Sakyamuni. So in Mandarin, Namo Bensi Sakyamuni Fo, then you bow. Then you come out. Namo Bensi Sakyamuni Fo, then you bow. Then you come out. But later on, as you become more skillful, you can recite and bow simultaneously. Understand not? Because the mind and the body as one. Then you save time. Otherwise, you come up, then you recite, then you bow. You recite, then you bow. Then later on, as you become, like Padmasuri say, it becomes very natural already, part of you. Then you realize you can actually recite and bow simultaneously. Namo Bensi Sakyamuni Fo. The timing is such that you will touch. Then you come up. Then Namo Bensi Sakyamuni Fo. You will touch.
Initially, I did try to bow. And then, by reciting, you said, Namo, the original Buddha. Right?
Yeah, Namo Bensi Sakyamuni Fo.
When I did that, I count the number of times I bow.
No need to count. What you need to do is, you only need to count for the first 20 times. Then you must have a stopwatch. You start, then you bow. Then you know after 20 times how many seconds. Then you divide the thing. Then you set your alarm clock. I remember you can do it for 10 to 15 minutes. It's very good. Because 1 minute you can do quite a number of bow. So you don't have to like purposely slow it down, don't it?
Yeah.
You initially do it at your natural pace. Just do. Don't try to know. Like walking, just walk. You walk until naturally you will know how to slow down by yourself. Then that mindfulness and the movement is one. The mind will naturally understand. And then you realize you are in sati. Then the form and mind will understand. Then you will know that sati is very different. That every movement, every turning, even the blinking of the eye, you're fully aware. Then all of a sudden you can feel, like what Brother Till, of course his one is in the formal meditation, you can hear your heartbeat and everything. Then you become very sensitive. Then everything will become very clear. All the movement like magnify. Then everything you do, like you very mindful, then that time you don't want to talk. You become very quiet, you just smile. Then everything you see, a lot of clarity. Then how people move and all those things, you can see the phenomenal world very clearly. Then no words on. Everything like slow motion. No words on, although I pronounce it. Then you realize the mind is just aware. Of course, it wants to perceive, it can perceive. But most of the time, it's just aware. Then later on, you look at the TV. Beautiful. About 24 years ago, I remember, when the mind transfer, I look at the TV. So fast, the thing changed. Because my mindfulness was vivid. All the movement. Then I no need to know one. The whole thing is so clear. Moving so fast, the pixels are changing everything. Then I just smile. Oh, this is the real thing that I see. That's why everything can be Dhamma. And a lot of people who don't quite understand, they warn you. They say the TV is a monster. I tell you to avoid. If I'm not wrong, Master Sun Hua, he did mention in his book that the TV is a monster. That's why I say it's not the TV, it's not the technology, it's not people, it's not the world, it's you. When you understand that everything is Dhamma, when you don't understand that everything is like a monster, that's why the Buddha told Ananda, when did I teach like that? Foolish one. Because there was one guy who came, he said, my teacher teach like that. See no evil, hear no evil, I'm perfect. You understand? Because you don't see any evil thing, that's why you don't have wrong thought. You don't hear any evil thing, you don't have any wrong thought. So he said, see no evil, hear no evil. Means what? You suppress, you don't want to go and see. Then how to live life? The world is not you alone. Not all good people. There are different types of beings. So how can you not see evil? Evil is everywhere. The Buddha told Ananda, when did I teach like that, is it? I teach you to see with understanding. Then evil is no more evil to you, understand? Where you perceive it negativity, that's why it's evil. You accept them for what they are, they become normal, natural, understand? Then you don't have to like do all these funny things. That's why you live life, and yet you are with life. Because you have the understanding, like money. Money is not the source of all evil. It's the user of money. The mind also the same. The user of thought. If you use it with understanding and wisdom, then thought become beautiful. Then it is not technology and the world that cause you suffering or a monster. It is your understanding that free you and liberate you. That's why you can stay in the world like the lotus flower in the muddy pond. But you can go above and flower as a lotus above all this field. But you are from the field, you come out. That's why lotus symbolize enlightenment, great enlightenment. Okay? So just do, don't worry. Okay, I rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you all continue. You can off the light. If I speak too long, my throat, after a few days, no more voice.